there was a time when the whole world was known as Bharatvarsha. Unfortunately, now the land of Bharatvarsha has become very small. It has shrank into a land which is surrounded by the geographical or political boundary of the land of India. But when we say India, we actually, or Bharatvarsha actually meant the whole world. And just as the sun planet, the whole planet is known as the sun globe, or the moon planet, Chandra Loka, it signifies the whole of the moon planet. Similarly, there are planets like Jupiter, Mars, Mercury. Similarly, this Earth planet is actually one planet. And this Earth planet was known as Bharatvarsha. And the name, the way it came, also is very significant, because the land Bharatvarsha, the word Bharat literally means the land where people are absorbed in spiritual knowledge. It's a combination of two words, Bha and Rato. Bha means light. The Sanskrit word Bha means light. Now this is not the light of just the electric bulb or fire. The real light is actually the light of knowledge. And Rato means absorbed. So Bharatvarsha is the land where people are absorbed in the light of spiritual knowledge. And wherever people are absorbed in that in spiritual knowledge, that land is called Bharatvarsha. So when the whole, throughout the whole world, throughout the entire world, people are absorbed in transcendental knowledge, that land was known as Bharatvarsha. But then, due to the influence of Kali, which started about 5,000 years ago, when people started to reject the spiritual culture, then the land of Bharat started to shrink. Even some hundreds years ago, actually the land of Bharatvarsha stretched from the border of Persia or Iran to Java, Sumatra, Bali, Borneo. And people there used to practice the Vedic culture. Even today, when you go to Indonesia, Bali, we see that people are practicing the Vedic culture there. And we have seen how India became divided, how Bharatvarsha again became divided into India and Pakistan. Why it was divided? Because the people from that particular land did not want to practice spiritual culture, the Vedic culture. Therefore, that land was separated from India. Now, it's interesting also to note that nowadays, no one actually calls the land of Bharatvarsha as Bharatvarsha. People call that particular stretch of track of land as India. Because even in India, people are not practicing the Vedic culture. A spiritual culture. Therefore, Bharatvarsha is practically disappeared. But although it disappeared from the surface of this earth, apparently, but the land of Bharatvarsha is being established all over the world today once again. That is, wherever the people are absorbed in spiritual culture, that is the place of Bharatvarsha. That is the land of Bharatvarsha. And that is the land for human civilization. Actually, human life is meant for spiritual culture. And Bharatvarsha is the land where human beings are engaged in that spiritual culture. So by the tireless activities of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, today the Bharatvarsha is being established throughout the world. Although today it seems that just in some pockets the spiritual culture is being practiced and devotees are being absorbed in cultivating this culture, but this is just the beginning. Within a very short time, we will see that this movement is spreading all over the world in leaps and bounds. This movement is destined to spread. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted 500 years ago, Prithivite ache jato nagoradi gram sarvatra prachar hoibe monam. So 500 years ago, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that in every town and village all over the world, not only in every continent or every nation, but he emphatically said in every town and village, Prithivite ache jato nagoradi gram sarvatra prachar hoibe monam. Everywhere this Krishna consciousness movement will spread. This Krishna Naam will spread. That means people everywhere, in every town and village, people will be chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And today we are seeing that by Srila Prabhupada's wonderful arrangement, it has at least spread throughout the world. Even 20 years ago, if someone came and told that, you know, this Krishna consciousness movement will spread all over the world, what would people have thought? If the Hare Krishna devotees were there 20 years ago in these countries, maybe even 25 years ago this movement came to Germany. Now if 20 years ago someone told that this Hare Krishna movement is going to spread all over the world, what would have been your reaction? What would have been your reaction, Mr. Roy?
So as in a museum, I would have actually accepted it in a positive way.
Very nice. But still you would have some doubt, yeah? Mm-hmm. Isn't it? How is it possible?
Yeah. Huh? Now, since I am here, this, then it is true.
And right.
If I accept it in India, then the question of doubt would have not been answered.
I see. But to tell you frankly, if someone told me 20 years ago, I would have had my doubts. That. Mainly because, you know, like the way the world is today, people are not really so much concerned about spiritual life. People are rejecting spiritual culture. At a time when people are not at all interested in spiritual culture, to kind of, you know, accept a statement like that in every town and village, it's going to spread, you know, like it sounds a little impossible. But today we can see that that has been possible. And now it's only a matter of time. Because as people become interested about spiritual life, they will inquire. Right? Today many people are interested to know about God. But where do we find at least, you know, some authentic, bona fide and detailed informations about God. There's hardly any information about God. Say two most important religions of the world today, Christianity and Islamism. If we approach Christianity and inquire about God, there's hardly any information. Then ultimately the Roman Catholics say, well, Jesus Christ is God. But Jesus never said that He is God. And Islamism says, don't bother about God. Don't imagine His name, don't imagine His form. Just believe that He is. And how He looks like, where He lives, what does He do, don't worry about that. If you question, then that is an offense. That's a blasphemy. To even inquire about God is a blasphemy, according to their religion. So if people become really curious to know, it's a matter of people becoming aware that there are some people who know about God. There are some literatures that has details about God. And as I mentioned the other day, Prabhupada very boldly announced that if you want to know about God, come to me. I'll tell you what He looks like, how He looks like, what His name is, where He lives, what He does, what He likes, what He dislikes. I can even give you His telephone number. So, and when Prabhupada said that, He meant it. He meant it. That is, if you want to know anything, if you want to know about God, then come to me, I'll give you all information about God. And Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, all the Vedic scriptures are actually containing the informations about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when people become interested, and then they get to know that yes, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness has all informations about God. So if I want to know about God, then let's go to Hare Krishna movement. And in this way, the sincere people will become more and more attracted towards this Krishna Consciousness movement. Anyway, I wanted to speak about Mahabharata today. So this Bhagavad Gita, as I was trying to explain, this Bhagavad Gita is a part of Mahabharata. And Mahabharata is the history of this world. And this world, this planet is the planet meant for human beings. The human beings reside on the earth planet. And this is actually the history of mankind in the earth planet. And what is the history? This history of Mahabharata is actually coming from the Moon dynasty. And there is also, there are two specific Kshatriya lineages, the two royal lines. One is coming from sun god Suryadev, and the other is coming from moon god. So they are known as Surya Vamsa and Chandra Vamsa. In Surya Vamsa, Lord Ramchandra appeared. Vivashan is the sun god. His son is Manu, Vaivashyata Manu. Manu's son is Ikshaku. And in this line of Ikshaku, Lord Ramchandra appeared. So that is one line. And from the moon dynasty came this Kuru Vamsa or the Pandavas. So this Mahabharata is the history of that line specifically. And in this line, Krishna appeared. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared. Now does it mean that Krishna was not there and then He just was born in this family like us? No, Krishna takes birth like an ordinary person simply out of His
out of his causeless mercy or out of his will. Krishna doesn't need to take birth. God doesn't need to take birth. He can come any way he wants. But still sometimes he takes birth. And he acts like a human being. That doesn't mean that he becomes a human being, but he actually appears in the human society, acts like a human being, and in order to attract other human beings towards him. Just like Krishna appeared in the fish society as mean avatar. Krishna appeared as a tortoise, kurma avatar. Krishna appeared as a boar, as an animal, as a boar, as a pig, Varahadev. Krishna appeared as half man, half lion, Nrisingadev. And when Krishna appeared as Nrisingadev, he just appeared from a pillar. His devotee announced, Prahlad told his father, who was the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, that yes, Krishna is present even in this pillar. Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad, where is Krishna? Where is your Hari? And Prahlad said, Hari is everywhere. Then Hiranyakashipu asked, everywhere? Does it mean he is in this pillar also? He said, yes, he is in this pillar also. Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastha. Krishna is situated in every single universe, Brahmanda, and at the same time he is also residing within every single atom. So this is how Krishna is present everywhere. So yes, he is also within the pillar. And then Hiranyakashipu, he was such a powerful person, he just hit that pillar with his fist and the pillar just broke. But at that time he saw there was a terrible sound and a very strange figure came out of the pillar whose head was like that of a lion. And his body was like a man's, Nara Simha. Nara means a man and Simha means a lion, half man, half lion form. So this way the Lord can come from anywhere. As Varaha, he came from the nostril of Brahma. A small little thing appeared from the nostril of Brahma and it became so big within a very short time that that boar dove into the causal ocean and went into the nether region of this world. I'm sorry, Garbha ocean, and went into the nether region of the world, and from there it rescued the earth planet. The whole earth planet was lying in between his teeth or tusk. Bashati dashanu shikhare dharoni tabo lagna shoshini kalanko kalevani magna keshav dhrita shukara rupa. The Keshav, Krishna, appeared as a boar, as a transcendental boar. And he rescued, he lifted the earth planet on his tusk. So, although he appeared as a very small, tiny little boar, but then within no time he became so big that he could just hold the earth planet on his tusk. And that's how he lifted the earth planet and rescued the earth planet. But as Krishna, he appeared, he as the son of Vasudev and Devaki. Now, although Krishna appeared as the son of Vasudev and Devaki, but right after his birth, he displayed his four-armed Narayan form to his parents, Vasudev and Devaki. So there is the difference between our birth and his birth. Krishna appeared as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His full glory. Whereas when we take birth, we are born in total ignorance. We don't know where we came from. We don't know where we are going. So somehow we just appear and then we begin to gather certain informations which occurs in our, which is retained in our memory, and that's how we are able to function. But that's not the case with Krishna. Krishna was born in His full glory as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And His activities are always superhuman. Although He appeared as a human being, but His activities were always unusual, superhuman activities. Like Krishna, when He was only 7 days old, He killed a witch called Putana, a demoness called Putana. Putana came to kill Krishna by offering Him her breasts, which was smeared with the most deadly poison. But Krishna not only digested the poison, but He also sucked her life air while He was sucking her breast. So in this way, we can see that Krishna's activities are unusual, uncommon. So that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although He appears as a human being, uncommon. And Krishna Himself said, that He takes birth, janma karma chame divyam. My birth and My activities are divyam, divine or transcendental. And evam javetti tattvataha, one who knows that in truth, takta dehang punar janma noipi mameti shvarjana. When he leaves his body, he does not come back again into this world. So if we can understand that Krishna's birth and Krishna's activities are divine, transcendental, beyond this material, beyond the laws of material nature, then we become free from our bondage of birth and death. Krishna also said that shambhavami atma mayaya, that I appear with my atma maya, with my internal potency. Then he also it's also been said, ajo opishan abhayatma bhutanam ishvaro opishan. Krishna, although He is aja, unborn, aja opishan avvayatma, He is unchangeable, inexhaustible, avvay. And bhutanam ishvaro opishan. And although He is the Lord and Master of all the living entities, but still, He takes birth as a human being through His internal potency. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita again it has been pointed out that Krishnero jateko khela tar moddhe noro lila noro bopu taharo sharup. Of all the activities of Krishna, the most wonderful of all the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His most wonderful activities are His human pastimes. When He acts as a human being, that is His most wonderful activities. And Naro Bopu Taharo Sharup, His original form is like that of a man. Naro means man, Bopu means a form. His form is like that of a human being. But that doesn't mean that Krishna is a human being. In this context, we can remember a statement from Bible. A man has been created according to the image of God. Now, do we find some resemblance here? Man has been created according to the image of God. Then what is the God's form like? If our form is created according to His image, then doesn't it imply that His original form is like ours? But there is a difference. That's why it is said that we have been created according to His image. That is, our forms are made of matter, whereas His form is non-material. His form is spiritual. His form is Satchidananda Vigraha. His form is made of eternity, knowledge and bliss. These are the three spiritual substances. The spiritual world, beyond this material nature, there is another nature, which is called the spiritual nature. And the spiritual nature is composed of three elements known as Sat, Chit and Ananda. That is, that nature is made of eternity, knowledge and bliss. Whereas this material nature is made of what? Yes, Asat or ignorance. And this material nature is composed of elements. Bhumi rapo anolo vayu khang mano buddhi devacha ahankara iti ang me bhinna prakriti ashtadha. This bhinna prakriti, this material nature, is made of eight elements. They are earth, water, fire, air, ether, and mind, intelligence, and false ego. So this material nature is made of these eight elements. But Krishna's form is not made with this earth, water, fire, etc. Krishna's form is made of eternity, knowledge and bliss. But he looked, but unfortunately our form is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. So Krishna comes in order to allure us, in order to take us, in order to generate some interest in us to go back to the spiritual sky, to Him. So Mahabharata basically describes about the activities of the Pandavas and Kauravas. And these Pandavas and Kauravas, when they were present on this planet, at that time Krishna appeared on this planet. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared. And why does He appear? He appears in order to deliver the devotees and to annihilate or destroy the demons. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sangsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Krishna comes from time to time in order to rescue His devotees. Paritranaya sadhunam. Sadhu means devotees of the Lord, and duskritam means the miscreants. In order to destroy or annihilate the miscreants, those who do not want to abide by the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna comes in order to perform that mission of re-establishing dharma or religious principles when people become atheistic, when they reject dharma. And when Krishna comes, then His devotees become more attracted towards Him, And the demons or the miscreants, they become inimical towards him. So when Krishna appeared, then his devotees, the Pandavas, were very much favored by him, and the saintly people of this world naturally became attracted towards Krishna and his devotees, the Pandavas. And those who are inimical towards Krishna, the demoniac people, they sided with Duryodhan, who was actually representing the demoniac principle. So basically, Mahabharata, the good part of the Mahabharata is actually describing the activities between the encounters between, or the activities of the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And then ultimately a battle was fought in the place of Kurukshetra, and there Krishna, just before the battle was about to begin, Krishna instructed Arjuna with this Bhagavad, with the knowledge of this Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, Gita means song, and Bhagavad means of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. So Bhagavan, the word Bhagavan means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the song that was sung, or the instructions that were given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Bhagavad Gita. Now question may arise that why the instruction has been mentioned here as the song. Because in Sanskrit, Sanskrit is such an advanced language that it used to be spoken in the form of poetry, and it used to be spoken in the form of song. It was composed as poetry, and it is spoken as songs. And that is the spiritual nature. The Sanskrit is a spiritual language. And in the spiritual sky, they speak in music, in songs. Vrindavan, Golok Vrindavan, the topmost region of the spiritual sky, has been described as katha ganam natyam gamanamapi. So this the spiritual sky, in the spiritual sky, katha or words are music, and movement, gamanam, is natyam, and movements are dance. So in the spiritual sky they speak in songs and they move in dance. So Bhagavad Gita, we can see that it has, it's spoken in perfect poetry, and Krishna, when he spoke, he actually sang this. So it is a poetry, but at the same time it contains the highest philosophy. This philosophy basically describes about the difference between matter and spirit. The difference between matter and spirit is the first thing that one must understand when he wants to make spiritual advancement. If anybody wants to understand the spiritual nature, he'll have to first understand what's the difference between matter and spirit. And then, when you deal about spirit also, then we can see that there are two types of spirits. One is an individual, minute spirit, the Jivatma, and the Supreme Spirit, or the Super Soul, or Paramatma. One is a tiny little spirit. We all are tiny little spiritual sparks. But Krishna is the Absolute Spirit, the Supreme Spirit, or Ishvara, or Bhagavan. Unfortunately, in this material nature, people do not have any information about the spiritual reality. People know only matter, and they do not have any information about spirit or the spirit soul. But any intelligent man can understand that the spirit is there. And the spirit is non-material. It's actually, we can very easily understand that. For example, this table is there, this platform is there, the floor is there, this building is there. Now all these are matter. But we are also here. And our bodies are also matter. But is there any difference between our bodies and this table? Is there any difference? Or no? No? Parthasarathi? There is no difference. Now that you are speaking, can the table speak?
Yes, this way, but I wanted to say body is only matter.
Yeah, the body is matter, but our body and the table's body, is there any difference? Right? You know? The table is inert.
Our body is conscious.
Now, what is making this difference between our bodies and the table? The spirit soul. How do we know that the spirit soul is there? The spirit soul's presence is perceived or felt through consciousness. We are conscious, whereas this table is not conscious, the mridanga is not conscious, this building is not conscious, the whole city of Wiesbaden is not conscious. But we are conscious. So what makes us conscious? Where does the consciousness come from? Right? From consciousness comes from the spirit soul. So as long as the spirit soul is present in the body is conscious. And as soon as the spirit soul leaves the body becomes matter, as Parthasarathi said. So, this body is made of matter, but there is an obvious difference between a living body and a dead body. So, what is the difference between a living body and a dead body? The presence of the spirit soul and absence of the spirit soul. So, that is the first information that we get from the Vedic literatures or from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is actually the summary of the whole Vedas. Now, then the question is, what is this spirit soul? What is this spirit soul? At least we can consider the characteristics of the spirit soul. The characteristics of the spirit soul, Krishna says, that the spirit soul is unchanging and eternal. Unborn, unchanging and eternal. Na jayate mriyate va kadachi. The spirit soul is never born. Na jayate. Mriyate va kadachi. Nor does it ever die. The spirit soul doesn't die. The atma does not die. The thing that makes this body alive does not die. Then who dies? Who dies? The body dies. The body dies. So when does the body die? When does the body die? Pravika, you want to say? Yeah, when the spirit soul leaves the body, then the body dies. Then when does the spirit, when does the body takes its birth? When the spirit soul takes the possession of the body. So birth and death is of the body. The spirit soul does not either die, nor does it ever take birth. So that's what Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, na jayate mriyate va kadachin, nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuya. One's being, it never ceases to exist. The spirit soul is eternal. And nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuya ajo nitya shashvato ayam purana na hannate hannamane shari. Just like nayam nainam chindanti shastrani. The spirit soul cannot be cut by any weapon. Nainam dahuti pavaka. The spirit soul cannot be burnt by fire. Na chainam kledayanto apo. It cannot also be moistened by water. Nayam shoshayati maruta. Nor can it be dried by air. So that is the identity of the spirit soul. In this way, Krishna explained very nicely the difference between matter and spirit. And that information, if you consider, this is the very basic spiritual informations are not available to the people in this world. How many people know that? Hardly anyone. This knowledge is not given in the universities or schools or colleges. When Prabhupada went to the MIT in Boston, the most prestigious institution, Prabhupada's first question was, where is the department that studies what happens to a person when he dies, or what happens to him after he dies? Is there any department in this university, in this institution, that deals with what is the cause of a person's being alive and what happens to a person when he dies? No. So in this way, the first thing Prabhupada pointed out to the greatest educationists of this world, that they are nothing but a bunch of fools. They don't have any information whatsoever. The most important thing is not at all being considered in our education system. And that's why the world is just going down. It's becoming more and more degraded with the passing of time. Therefore, Prabhupada established this International Society for Krishna Consciousness to give this proper education to people in general. And this is open to all. Anyone can come and enroll himself or herself in this educational institution and make his life really successful. At least we are benefiting because Prabhupada came. We at least found some information about our true identity. Otherwise, prior to joining this movement, prior to reading Srila Prabhupada's books, we all were thinking that we are these bodies and the ultimate goal of our existence is to enjoy through this body. But due to Srila Prabhupada's teachings, we realized this body is just a covering of our real self. Jirnani vashangshi yatha vihaya navani grinhati naro aparani tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani annani sanjati navani devi. Just as one gives up his old worn out clothes and then puts on a new one, similarly when this body becomes old and worn out, then we give up this old body and put on a new body. So, in plain and simple words, this body is just the dress for the spirit soul. Now, if a person is only concerned about his dress, will he be considered very intelligent? If somebody just takes care of his dress but doesn't take care of his self, he won't be considered intelligent. He makes this dress look very nice, but he doesn't give any food to this body. Will he be considered intelligent? Or will he enjoy? Really? No. Similarly, if we are concerned only about the body but don't care about the soul, that is also not at all intelligent. So the real intelligent person is he who takes care of the soul, the soul's welfare. And the soul's welfare is to make, to know the difference between matter and spirit, recognize the soul's real spiritual identity, and recognize the supreme soul of whose part and parcel we, these individual souls, are, and as part and parcel, what is our relationship with that supreme soul, the supreme personality of Godhead, and then how we can become re-established in our lost relationship with the Lord. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada actually showed us how to make our life successful. And when one pursues, when one follows the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and leads his life accordingly, then he naturally becomes very joyful and his life becomes successful. Hare Krishna. Now I'll get into a discussion. If anybody has any question or if somebody wants to make any comment, you can do so. Yes, Sarasvati.
Maharaj, in Heidelberg, you were explaining about how in the Vedic culture everything is meant for purification of Krishna. And you also mentioned the dances and the music. So I was wondering how the Sipatrim and the Sabbatim, because there is no singing, how this is conducted to Krishna and also the Shanai music and different types of music.
You see, ultimately everything is coming from the Vedic culture. Sitar is a modification of an instrument called Veena. Tabla is actually a modification of Mridanga. You see, the Mridanga was broken into two, right? You split the Mridanga in half. Then one half is the tabla and the other half is the baya. And Shen Then one half is the tabla and the other half is the baya. And Shehnai also is a kind of a flute. And that's by Krishna. And but the rest of it is just music to give accompaniment to the vocal. The voice was the prominent part or the main part. And the others were just to support the vocal presentation. Is it clear?
And you might go also sometimes in morning to play.
Shehnai? Yes.
You could also unaccompany.
Yeah. What I heard, I personally didn't hear, But I heard Prabhupada say that you can play Shehnai, because it creates a very nice mood in the morning. Also, it is played by a Muslim. But actually, those Muslims, those who got into this Vedic music, they were not like ordinary Muslims, they were quite different. Most of them used to actually be vegetarians, and they used to be completely absorbed in the aspect of music that they were cultivating. And in many cases they were actually converted. At that time the Vedic culture became so distorted and perverted, and so many unpleasant things were happening, and so much exploitation was going on in the name of religion, that special lower class of people, they converted, they became Muslims, because Muslims, they found that Muslim religion was more broad and accommodating. And so out of pressure or voluntarily, many of them, most of the artisans, those who are considered to be Sudras or low class, they converted into Muslims. And but although they converted, but at the bottom of it, they maintained their, you know, deep attachment to the Vedic culture, especially those who were artisans and musicians. Like, for example, and that's what India is, that's what the Vedic culture is. It's so deep that nothing can actually shake it. For example, you see, in Kerala, there's a very strong Christian influence. Most of them actually, most of the inhabitants of Kerala became Christian.
There are more Christians than Christians in Europe.
And, but then, you see, they, although they're Christians, but they're Brahmin Christians, Vaishya Christians, Sudra Christians. And the Brahmin Christian won't give his daughter in marriage to a Sudra Christian. But of course, with Islamism it's a little different, because they are very heavy and they are very intolerant. I mean, once one becomes a Muslim, that's it. Like, they had to sever all their links with Hinduism or Vedic culture. But at the same time, say, for example, there's a very big, I mean, one of the greatest musicians of India, his name is Ustad Alauddin Khan. He was a sarod player. He's the father of Ali Akbar Khan and the guru of Ravi Shankar. You see, he used to worship Kali. He was a Kali worshipper. Although he was a Muslim.
And even Ravi Shankar's wife is also.
Yeah, Ravi Shankar's wife is actually his daughter. And his daughter's name is Annapurna. And his daughter also was a very, very good sitar player. Yes, well. As I said, like, I didn't hear it from Prabhupada as such, but Shehnai is considered as a part of the Vedic tradition also. Like, for example, in India, during the wedding, during marriage, they play Shehnai. But the name is a Muslim name. It's not exactly a Vedic instrument, but it is a modification of a Vedic instrument. And the ragas are all from the Vedas. The Muslims, they just took it and modified it. And modified it in the sense, they used it for their sense gratification. Music and dance used to be played in the temple. But the Muslims took it to their court and used it for their sense gratification. Whereas it was actually meant for glorifying Krishna and give pleasure to Krishna.
Sign of a living body is consciousness, he says. So consciousness is spiritual. So they are not also material consciousness. Sometimes I hear
What I meant is, the consciousness, the origin of consciousness is spiritual. Consciousness originates from spiritual, but then it can become materialized. Just like it is with your eyes that you see, right? But if you put on a colored glass, then you see the color. Right? So similarly, our consciousness is spiritual, but when it is projected through the material mind and material senses, then the consciousness becomes materialized.
Sometimes it is said that Bharata Varsha, it is the earth, but also in Srimad Bhagavatam there is a description of nine Varshas in Jambudvipa. And also Srila Prabhupada in one purport he comments that this Varsha is like Mediterranean Sea, and he's giving description of different Varshas. Is it that Bharata Varsha includes all other Varshas, or these other Varshas?
You see, on Bhumandal there is Jambudvip, and Jambudvip has nine varshas and nine oceans. And in that way we have to understand that the patch of land that is surrounded by the salt water ocean, that is the Bharatvarsha.
I know that Krishna is the Supreme because he has the most spontaneous pastimes.
Intellectually.
Internally. And he has the moral qualities. But how can we present it to the public so that they can take it, like maybe from other faiths they can see it's just a faith, or on some level it might be logic that Vishnu would be the source?
How we'll present it. The first consideration is that first you have to be convinced about it. Right? And once you have been convinced about it, then it doesn't matter how you present it or whether they accept it or not. And that's not important. But you feel the importance, you feel that it's important that you must present it to others. And as I said, it's not that everybody will accept it, because most of the people in this world are foolish, right? They don't have any inclination or any desire even to understand or listen. But at least those who are interested to hear, those who are curious to know, we can explain to them. And the explanation is, when the basic understanding is clear that there is a difference between matter and spirit, when you recognize that it's a spirit soul that makes the body alive, and when you recognize that there is a supreme spirit who is the supreme personality of Godhead and who is the cause of creation, maintenance and annihilation of everything, then we can also provide these informations to others. Like, if there is a creator, then who is he? Right? We can't say that this material nature is a creation due to accident. Right? Only some foolish scientists say that. There's a Big Bang, or there was a primordial soup, all kinds of nonsense that they are presenting. Actually, that the creation out of, there's a very nice statement from one American philosopher, forgot his name, about creation being caused by accident. That everything was created out of accident. he made a statement like, it sounds like the creation came out of accident, sounds like saying that there was an explosion in a printing press, right? And due to the explosion, all the types went flying. But when they fell in such an order that Webster Dictionary was printed. So, you know, like out of accident, you only get chaos. You don't get order. But do you see chaos in the nature? No. There's a wonderful order. And whatever chaos is there, that's created by man. All the chaos of this world has been created by man. But Krishna's creation is wonderful. And see how men are actually creating chaos or destroying everything. Krishna gave us one perfect ecological balance. Men are taking oxygen, giving out carbon dioxide, right? And the trees are taking carbon dioxide, giving out oxygen. And this balance is perfect. There'll never be any scarcity of oxygen. But then man came and created automobiles, right? And they're pumping out not only carbon dioxide, but carbon monoxide, and vitiating the whole atmosphere. So man is the biggest destroyer. And that's why they say, since their whole tendency is destructive, they say everything is out of accident. But when it comes to enjoying this material nature, they don't say it's all accident. Then it's very, very real to them. Anyway, I mean, unfortunately, you know, people are being very badly misguided today, and due to some unscrupulous people, unscrupulous leaders of the society. But those who are intelligent, they'll understand.
Is there some material consciousness, or is this just like switching off the light or the pleasure of dying?
What do you mean?
The spirit soul, when it's with Krishna, it's alive, but when it's going towards Maya, it's actually dying. The consciousness is dying, isn't it?
Living into his consciousness is dying.
Yeah.
It's not dying, it becomes bewildered. It becomes illusioned. Consciousness is there, like, aren't you conscious? Huh? Little. Okay. So whatever little consciousness you have proves that you are not dead. Right? So yes, we all are conscious, but unfortunately our consciousness is being projected into this material nature, through our material means of mind and senses. Yeah.
I was going to ask something similar, like after Hines. In India, there's a lot of people who are accepting Vishnu as God, and Krishna as an avatar of Vishnu. Mostly that kind of doubt is based on the last pastime of Krishna, how he disappeared from his birth plan. Could you maybe tell us something, the real understanding of that pastime?
See, je jatha maang prapadyante, tang stathaiva bhajamaha. Krishna says that as one surrenders unto me, accordingly I reciprocate. So if someone thinks that Krishna is an avatar, incarnation, then yes, his understanding is right. Like, incarnations of the Lord come from the Kshiradakshai Vishnu. So in that sense, yes, he is a Kshiradaksha, he is an incarnation of Kshiradaksha Vishnu. But the real understanding or the ultimate understanding is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. You see, when we say the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is Krishna. Like Srimad Bhagavatam, like Srimad Bhagavatam describes that ete changsho, you see, Srimad Bhagavatam describes all different incarnations of the Lord, right? Not all, but different types of incarnations, 24 different incarnations have been described. But after that, it is said that all these are parts and parts of the parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam, and that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahma Samhita also says, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishthan Nana Vataram Akarod Bhuvane Shukintu Krishna Swayam Samubhavat Paramapumanjo. That is, Ram, Nrisimha, Varaha, Kurma. These are Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishthan. They are his parts. Nana Avataram Akarod Bhuvaneshu. He manifested himself in different incarnations. Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramakumanjo. But Krishna is the original Supreme Personality. So in this way, when you approach the Vedic literatures, then we can see that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is not avatar, but he is avatari. He is the origin of all the incarnations. He is not an incarnation, but he is the origin of all incarnations. But then again, it has been described that although Krishna incarnates in innumerable ways, but those incarnations are all equal to him. There is no difference. Although they are Krishna's ansha, which literally means parts, but still they are non-different from Krishna. They have the equal potency. Right? And to explain that, again, Brahma Samhita is saying, Deeparchireva dasantaram abhupyatya Deepayate vivrita hetu samana dharma Jastadrigeva Vishnu chakala vibhati Govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. Just as from one lamp, other lamps are lit. Now when the lamps are lit, they give out the equal light, equal amount of light. Then there is no difference. Like first lamp lights the second lamp. Once the second lamp is lit, the first lamp and second lamp are identical. That way third, fourth, fifth, sixth, it goes on. But still the first lamp that lit all the other lamps is the original lamp. Similarly, Krishna is the origin of all the incarnations. Now, when it is also described that when Krishna incarnates, then all his incarnations also are there, present in him, in his body. So to say that Krishna is an incarnation of Kshiradakshai Vishnu is not wrong, because that Jugavatar aspect of Krishna is an incarnation of Kshiradakshai Vishnu, and those who want to see that Jugavatar Krishna in him, they will see him and they will identify that as the incarnation of the Kshiradakshai Vishnu. Yes?
There is the soul when the human being is
Right. The soul is there in the body. Soul is there in the body, but the soul is not displaying the signs of life in a proper way. And as you ask, where is the soul? Soul actually resides in the region of the heart. In the region of the heart. Not exactly in the heart. Like often people question, then what happens when there's a heart transplant? So does it mean another soul came into the body? No. The same soul is there. Soul does not exactly reside in the heart, but the soul sits on the heart. It's situated on the region of the heart. So when there is a heart transplant, it's for the time, although the heart is taken out, but soul is still there. It's something like, you know, someone, you are sitting on a chair, but the chair is broken. So someone comes and tells you, can you please just get up for a minute, I'll bring in another chair, good one. So you stand up for a few seconds and somebody comes, takes out the old chair and brings in a new chair.
Sometimes one has to decide to put off the machine.
Sometimes, eh?
The other human beings decide to put off the machines who that the heart.
Oh, who is in a coma?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And where I can't understand. That one can do this.
How one can do this?
The soul decides for itself if it will stay in the body or if it will go out of the body.
No. The soul doesn't have the ability to decide. It is the nature that decides. You see, nature is like a government, so to say. Like the government says, well, I build it, so this person will live in this house. And the government also decides that, well, now this house is going to collapse, so let him come out of this house and go to some other house. Right? Similarly, when this body becomes, you know, uninhabitable, then the nature says, okay, let this soul leave this body and go into another body. But as I said, like the men create all kinds of chaos. The men, they are very expert in creating all kinds of mess. So men, so-called doctors, they say, no, he should not live, let him stay in this body. The poor guy, he's suffering so much. And still they don't let him leave this body. The body is like, you know, you are living in a house that where nothing is functioning. There is no heizung, there is no water supply, there is no gas. So when you, and the roof is leaking, the walls are cracking. Now what's the use of staying in a house like that? And the government says, look, that house is finished. You go to another house. We've got a brand new house for you. But your so-called friend, who is actually your enemy, comes and tells you, no, you stay here. You don't have to leave. Right? And that's exactly what is happening, as you're saying. Like somebody in the coma, you know, they put all kinds of, you know, gadgets in his body. You know, 24 needles are stuck in. He can't eat, you know, they're putting some intravenous stuff in him, he can't breathe, you know, they got, you know, stuffed in some oxygen. Like, so the thing is, you know, we have to realize that there is a superior controller, that's the material, that's the nature. Nature is not inert. Nature is intelligent, nature knows. Like, nature gave us this body. Where did you get this body? We got this body from the nature. And it's functioning, it's nice, but when it becomes dilapidated, then if the nature says, okay, now you leave this body, so isn't it intelligent? to just follow the nature's law, nature's dictates. Yes, Saraswati.
Maharaj, we know that the table for two Brahmas and Bangalore, to my surprise, actually, it says that different persons, like the Brahmins, have different types of love and different tasks. And different practices. And my question is that if one would get a blood from another person, will that affect one's consciousness?
What Prabhupada actually meant is that according to one's consciousness, his constitution also differs from others. Right? It's not, I mean, obviously Prabhupada was not talking about people born in Brahmana families, but those who are Brahminical, their constitution is in certain way. And probably Prabhupada meant that, you know, their blood is of certain type. I don't know whether it will tally with the way they kind of group the blood now through the medical science. You know, like, they consider, really, they have another way of judging it. I don't really know. Like in English, there's an expression, the aristocrats are called the blue blood, blue-blooded. Well, I mean, from that point of view, we have to understand that, I mean, the aristocrats are actually the Kshatriyas. So they have another type of blood. Of course, the color is not blue. I mean, that's an English expression. You see, blood transfusion. What's it called? Transfusion. Yeah, blood transfusion is not actually done in the Vedic culture. In the Ayurveda, it's never done. These are actually, this modern medical science is very demoniac. But the Vedic medical science, you know, used to be very pure, and in that system, you know, blood transfusion was not done. No, generally not. But they had the medicine for everything. Anyway, in this areas, I know my knowledge is very limited. Yes. What kind of treatment?
Some healthy treatment. It's not.
I see.
Healing,
yeah.
But it's helping just to send some pain. And there is also one mother thing. She went at the same, and when she came. Because her consciousness, she has started attracting it. Because she say through this treatment, she doesn't know which person she is connected with here. That's the patient, but some mental connection.
So she means that she gets affected by her consciousness? Or?
Yes.
So that's why she stopped doing that? Well, so what's your question?
I just wanted to ask you if you can tell something for if it is...
whether it should be done or shouldn't be done? Or whether you should do it or not?
One day you told me I can do it and I just don't know if I can do it. But I wanted just do it because it's very nice for the devotees, and the devotees ask her why she doesn't do it because she knows it also. And
see, this is a very personal thing. I don't know what to say. Like, you know, if she doesn't feel comfortable doing it, like. But one thing I can say is that, you see, by serving the devotees, one doesn't get affected adversely. He or she can only benefit by serving devotees. If there is any transmission of, you know, karma, then she'll get only good karmas from the devotees. So that'll be beneficial for her. Yes, devotees need treatment and.
Maybe I didn't explain it. I thought she's not afraid of the karma, but she is interested. She is afraid of the connection with some other personality, because that's forced to do the healing is coming through other personality.
Well, I hope I got your question right. And I'll try to explain. You see, I know one psychic healer in South Africa. She's an European lady, and she's very good. I mean, I personally did not actually believe in psychic healing before. But, you know, I personally saw what she can do. Like, last year, remember, I had this problem with my knee. And I went to South Africa to get an operation. And then she, who I met just about a month or 2 months prior to that time, you know, like she came to one of my lectures and she became very attracted to Krishna consciousness. So when she got to know that I was going to have an operation, so she asked the devotees if I would give her a chance before I go to the hospital. And it was just the day before, actually, I was supposed to have the operation. And so I agreed, I said, why not, you know. And she's a very nice person, actually. And I knew her as a person, didn't know her, you know, as a psychic healer. And in 10 minutes, she cured me. I mean, there was no pain. And not only I cancelled this operation, I just started to travel all over South Africa. And then I got it again. After 7 days, it came back. And then, at that time, she's originally from Durban. But that time she was in Johannesburg, I also went to Johannesburg. She came to see me. And I told her that I got the pain again, and she took it out. And since then, I didn't have any problem. Although even the doctors, you know, like, they were before the operation, they even told that maybe I won't be able to sit cross-legged after the operation. Right? And but, you know, like, I mean, today you can see. So, the name of that lady is Heather. She was telling me one day, she was explaining the psychic healing. It's very close to Krishna consciousness, actually. She says that there is a store of energy. And, you see, all the ailments of the bodies, not all, but generally the ailments of the bodies are caused by two things. One is the natural decay of the body, and the other is, you know, lack of proper communication or, you know, supply of that energy that is coming from the store of the energy, storehouse of the energy. And as a healer, what she does is she just creates the link between that store and the body that is diseased. And then she explained one thing. She gave a few example that somebody who was her student tried to heal somebody just without being, you know, really qualified. And right after that, you know, the person who she was healing became healed, but she became sick. Now what happened is, in her case, that instead of making a link between that store of energy and the body, she took it, she didn't know how to become a medium, but she just took the whole thing, and that's where she became sick. Now, I'll go back to that point, the person who is healing, now if she is a medium between that store of energy and the person who she is healing, then she won't have any problem. But instead of becoming a medium, if she thinks that she is doing it, yes, then she'll have to take the card.
But how can you be sure that you will have no connection with demons when you do this?
When you do this? Yes, that's a good question. How do you know that you don't have any connection with the demons? Now, you see, the demoniac force causes harm, but the divine force benefits and causes good to others. Now we have to see, like, how that energy or how that ability is being used. If it is being used in harming others, then of course it's demonic. But if it is used for benefiting others, then it is not demonic. Like, for example, there is a knife. With a knife, an expert surgeon can operate upon somebody and cure. But the same knife, in the hand of a murderer, will kill somebody. So the ultimate consideration is the application of the energy. Yes, Bala?
At the same point, sometimes it's very difficult to discriminate. Like, a person like Ravan, big demons, they try to benefit people by elevating them to the heavenly planets, and they would like it very much.
Very good point. So then we have to consider whether it is for their ultimate benefit. The ultimate benefit is Krishna consciousness. So if something is meant for the linking him or, you know, helping him to become connected to Krishna, then of course it is the Supreme Divine. But if the person who is doing it is doing it for his own aggrandizement, without linking them to Krishna or, you know, bringing them to Krishna, yes, then it is not divine in the ultimate sense. Yes.
And the old devotees are getting cured like that. Sometimes I hear the argument that it is good if one is a little bit suffering, because otherwise one could feel like being enjoying if one is too healthy and too.
It depends upon, you know, the person's spiritual development, spiritual advancement. Right? An advanced devotee, he will just accept everything as Krishna's mercy. Like, for example, Prabhupada, he did not want to take any treatment. But a person at a neophyte stage, like, you know, he doesn't have that kind of conviction that he can accept everything as Krishna's mercy, then he can take the treatment. It will ultimately depend upon the person's state of consciousness or person's Krishna consciousness. Of course, yes. Ultimately, if one can take everything as Krishna's mercy and say goodbye to all the treatments, then that's the best. But are you ready for that? Okay, so if not, then take the treatment. And instead of using a healthy body for enjoying, use it in Krishna's service. That is the understanding. Okay, get cured for the sake of rendering better service to Krishna. Yes, Subhadra?
What is the definition of pure culture?
What's the different definition of?
Real culture and
real art. What's the difference? I have to think a little. Okay, the Sanskrit word for art is kala. Kala means the way of expressing one's ideas or one's inner thoughts, inner expressions. And culture, the Sanskrit word for culture is sanskriti, which means the process for purification. So when, and the process, what is the process of purification? You see, the cause of our impurities, cause of our contamination, is our separation from Krishna, our rejection of Krishna. We rejected Krishna, that's why we become contaminated. Therefore the way to become purified is by remembering Krishna. So, the activities that remind us of Krishna, that is culture. But our inner expressions, to give a vent to our inner to express our inner feelings or inner state of consciousness, that is the art or color. So you see the difference? One is with Krishna, and the other may not be with Krishna. The kala, when the art is used in remembering Krishna. Say, for example, somebody is a musician. Now he is making music to sing the glory of Krishna. That way he is remembering Krishna and he is making others remember Krishna. So that is a culture. Right? But someone is an artist and he is just giving expression to his inner moods. So that is an art. Now what do you want to be? An artist or a culturist? So I asked you, what do you want to be? An artist? Or a culturist. Very good. So, okay, then I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Shri.